On December 8, 1980, John Lennon was shot and killed outside of his New York apartment building.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
John Lennon was brought to the emergency room of the St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital this evening, shortly before 11 p.m. He was dead on arrival. Extensive resuscitative efforts were made, but in spite of transfusions and many procedures, he could not be resuscitated. He had multiple gunshot wounds in his chest, in his left arm, and in his back. I don't know exactly how many bullets there were. There were seven wounds. His wife was with him at the time of the injury and indeed accompanied him to the emergency department. I did tell his wife that he was dead, and she was most distraught at the time and found it quite hard to accept.
John Lennon died on this day in rock in 1980.
You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world.
This is Pete Fornital.
People say I'm crazy. From ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange. Surely you're not happy now, you no longer play the game. People say I'm lazy, dreaming my life away. All kinds of advice designed to enlighten me. When I tell them that I'm doing fine, watching shadows on the wall. Don't you miss the big time, boy, you're no longer on the ball.
It is 13 minutes after 10 o'clock on this 8th day of December, 81. Pete Fornital at WNEW-FM in New York. Good morning.
Thank you. state lay low. Life went on beyond the Palisades. They all bought Cadillacs and left there long ago. We held a concert out in Brooklyn to watch the island bridges blow.
Summer Highland Falls. They say that these are not the best of times, but they're the only times I've ever known. Meditation in cathedrals of our own. Now I have seen that sad surrender in my lover's eyes. I can only stand apart and sympathize, for we are always what our situations hand us. It's either sadness or euphoria.
Sadness or euphoria. Oh, 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 o
That is Billy Joel, of course, from the live album Songs in the Attic. It is 10:22 at 102.7 Radio in New York, WNEW-FM. Pete Fornatale on this Tuesday, December 8th, and I've got a rather nice surprise coming up for you right after these words.
Here's Bob and Ray for Panasonic.
Today I'm interviewing Harlow Whitcomb, author of How to Talk Slow and Influence People. Good day. Say, what's the trick to talking slow?
Timing and practicing with a Panasonic microcassette.
Recorder. A Panasonic microcassette recorder.
Recorder.
Panasonic.
A Sonic gives slow talkers a tremendous
selection of microcassette recorders, from one that's super slim to one that starts at under $60.
Selection of two-hour
microcassette recorders.
Recorders. That's important when you
talk slow.
If you have a lot to say or need a lot of time to say it, Panasonic has a microcassette recorder that's just your speed.
And furthermore,
if you're a student or business person and you have a lot of reading and studying to do, this message is for you. Classes are forming right now for the Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics special 7-day holiday course. This course will begin and end during the Christmas holidays. It is not an abbreviated course. It is our regular course taught in 7 consecutive lessons. This course is the answer to your problems, because in only 7 days, you learn how to read much faster, how to concentrate completely, how to comprehend and remember more of what you read, how to take accurate, concise notes, how to study efficiently and effectively, and how to get organized for maximum results. Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics will definitely work for you. So make the decision today to do something about your reading and studying problems. Call us, Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics, at area code 212-869-9440. That's 212-869-9440.
I'm a little disoriented. We did a commercial there for the slow talkers and then for the speed readers. I imagine that's a little confusing to some of you, but that's the way it is. 10:25, Pete Fornatale at WNEW-FM in New York. I promised you a surprise in the form of my special in-studio guest, Rick Springfield, who will be doing our Jersey Christmas show next Monday night at the Capitol Theater, and we hope to see thousands of you out there bringing gifts for needy children, which is a part of the tradition. Rick, I was going to say that this is rather early for you to be at business in the morning, but that's probably not true. What is your television taping schedule like? What kind of days do you put in there?
Generally, it's a pretty easy day. It's like 9 o'clock. We get up sometimes in the morning, like 9 to 9:30 start.
Right.
But like when I'm on the road, it's. I mean, I've got up, like, got to bed at 4 and got up at 5 to catch a plane.
The two lifestyles seem to be at such a variance. How do you handle that?
I'm not quite sure. I think I'll know in a little while. I'm still trying to figure it out. Fast planning. It's just coordinating everything right, you know, so that I can get to some place in time to do what I have to do. Right. Mainly the concert, flying in and out, like, from concert back to L.A., to do the show is like the hardest thing in the moment.
And it seems to me that a performer has a difficult enough time creating and maintaining one persona. Now, you've got two going pretty well for you simultaneously here, and they do seem to be personas that can be considered at odds.
I'm totally schizophrenic.
And have been for many years.
And have been for many years, yes. We both agree with that, don't you, Rick? Yes, I agree.
You can carry this out by yourself.
You mind if I interview myself? Well, they're all forms of role-playing. I mean, I don't know any rock performer or music performer or anyone that whose stage persona is exactly the same as his offstage persona. Everybody has a role that they assume on stage. It's part of them, but it is a role.
So now we got three things going.
You got three, yeah. You got the guy you're talking to now, you got the guy up on stage, and you got the guy back in L.A. in the doctor suit.
When they do the remake of that movie that Joanne Woodward won the Academy Award for.
Three Faces of Rick.
Three Faces of Adam. I guess that would be the... I don't know what we're talking about. Listen, a couple of nice honors have been bestowed. This has been quite a year for you as we round out 1981 here.
Yeah, we're both very happy.
But a couple of the most recent ones are, if I may toot your horn here for a moment or so, number one male vocalist in the pop singles category, according to Cashbox magazine. That's the one that will be on the stands, I believe, next week. And platinum status for your album.
For the album, yeah.
How does that feel?
Great. It's one of those things that the platinum album is like one of those things that I'll probably in a couple of weeks when it's like on the wall and I'll, you know, hanging up in the wall, I'll kind of go, oh yeah. it's one of the few goals that like you can actually hold in your hand,
sure.
You know?
It's a tangible.
Yeah. And it's, acting is so nebulous, and music sometimes can be pretty nebulous, so at least if you're right, you got something that you can like put on tape or sing and say, yes, I did that, that's finished, you know. The platinum album is one of those things. It's like, yes, that's been done, see right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's next as far as your recording career is concerned?
Well, I just finished recording a new album with Keith Olsen, who produced Jesse's Girl. We finished that up about a week ago, and that's going to be out in February.
What can you describe for me the differences between the recording of this album and the new one? Did you feel additional pressure to top yourself, for example?
Oh yeah, but I've felt like that all my life, whether people liked what was done first or not. And I think most people who are serious about it, well, you know, how serious can it be about a piece of plastic with a hole in the middle, you know? But you know what I'm talking about. I felt that the songs were stronger, and I do feel the songs are a lot stronger, and I'm real happy with working with Keith, because he's, we just think along the same lines, mm-hmm. as far as the songs go. Overall, I think the album is a better album. It's a good step up from Working Class Dog.
Mm-hmm. Well, Monday night will be a special treat for so many reasons. The time of the year, the point behind the event, and certainly the opportunity for all of your fans to gather in the musical arena,
yeah.
as opposed to the 525 dotted lines on the fluorescent tube there in the living room. We look forward to your performance on Monday night at the Capitol Theater, and thank you in advance for contributing to what has been a long-standing tradition around these parts.
It's a pleasure, a real pleasure.
Rick, thanks for coming by. We'll see you Monday night.
We both got it.
Both halves of the bill for next Monday night at the Capitol Theater over in New Jersey. We hope you will join us. That's Carla DeVito and her remake of Midnight Confessions, Rick Springfield before that, and Love is All Right Tonight. 23 before 11 now at WNAW-FM in New York.
We're here at Giants Stadium in New Jersey, and it's first down and 10 yards to go. Wait, the quarterback is running out of the huddle, and no, that's no quarterback. It's that McDonald's guy, and he's shouting something.
It's up to you, New Jersey. McDonald's needs a decision. What's going to be number one in New Jersey? Chicken McNuggets or Big Mac sandwich?
Big Mac McNuggets!
That's two answers. McDonald's needs one. One answer only.
Big Mac McNuggets!
Oh, come on now. Would you rather have two all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun, or the tenderest, dippinest, no-bone pickinest, chickenest chicken there is?
Chicken McNuggets!
Oh, please, what's going to be number one in New Jersey? Chicken McNuggets or Big Mac?
Chicken McNuggets!
New Jersey, New York, and Fairfield County, Connecticut, it's up to you.
Tap, tap, cola, what a beautiful drink. Tap, tap, cola, beautiful people. Tap, tap, cola, beautiful to me.
Hello?
Mother, it's me.
Hmm?
Listen, something terrible's happened.
What is it, dear?
Martin said I was chubby.
Well, dear, you really do pack in the food. Maybe you ought to start counting calories.
Calories? How do you count calories?
Well, you can start with tab. That's just one calorie.
One?
Mm-hmm.
I can count one calorie.
That's my girl.
Ma?
Hmm.
Am I?
What?
Chubby.
Well, let's just put it this way, dear. You take after your mother.
Oh.
Tab cola, beautiful to me. Real cola tastes just one calorie.
Calorie never tasted so good.
Crazy Eddie is going video game crazy. And just in time, too, because Christmas is coming and Crazy Eddie's Christmas sale is on now. Crazy Eddie's Christmas sale with the absolute lowest prices anywhere on anything and everything in video games. Atari's video computer system, Magnavox Odyssey 2, Bally's video arcade, Mattel's Intellivision. Crazy Eddie's got them all and all the latest game cartridges, too. Shop around, get the best prices you can find on video games. Then go to Crazy Eddie and... and he'll beat them. 10 great locations in Manhattan, the Bronx, Brooklyn, Syosset, Paramus, East Brunswick, Union, Westchester, Westbury. And don't forget, Crazy Eddie services and repairs everything he sells in his own factory-authorized, professionally staffed service centers. It's Crazy Eddie's Christmas sale, and Crazy Eddie's going video game crazy. Now's the time to get the video game you've always wanted. Crazy Eddie, his Christmas sale prices are insane.
Crazy Eddie's open 10 to 10 Monday through Saturday, and all stores except Paramus will be open this and every Sunday till Christmas from 11 to 7. Call Crazy Eddie at 212-645-1196. Pete Fornital at WNEW-FM in New York on this December 8th, 1981. WNEW-FM remembers John Lennon in our own special way.
It was banned here as well. What they thought it was a pro-drug song.
What was it to you, John? Was it, it was something that was very important?
Yeah, because I've always expressed what I've been feeling or thinking at the time, however badly or not, you know, from early Beatle records on. It became more conscious later. So I was just writing the experience I'd had of withdrawing from heroin. And saying, this is what I thought when I was withdrawing, you know.
But also musically, it was very interesting. I mean,
yeah, Eric Clapton was on that too.
Yes, and also we did attempt a few musically advanced, interesting things in it.
Yeah, Mark Bolan said it was the only new thing that had happened since the original Beatles when it came out. But I wasn't thinking, I'm going to make a new sound. But it was pretty, what they call minimal now, just bass, drums, and guitar.
Fever is high. Can't see no future.
It was banned because it referred to drugs. To me, it was a rock and roll version of The Man with the Golden Arm. You know, it's like banning The Man with the Golden Arm because it showed Frank Sinatra suffering from drug withdrawal. To ban the record is the same thing. It's like banning the movie because it shows reality.
Does it amuse you that people's attitudes have changed over the years? Perhaps amuse is totally the wrong word. How do you both look at it now as people that were involved in it, for want of a better phrase, and were, in your case, were honest enough to come out and put something down on musically on the subject?
I don't think about it that
much. Well, it's just like it's a trip that we went through. But at the same time now, it's clean-up time. And we're really sort of like cleaning our bodies. And, you know, it's very important that.
It's just strange when you hear people are snorting in the White House and that stuff, you know, after the misery they put a lot of people through, and like they bust us in England. And I have a record for life. I have problems getting in countries because this guy bust me. I've never denied having been involved with drugs, but at that particular time, there was a question raised in the House of Parliament. Why do they need 40 cops to arrest John and Yoko? That thing was set up. The Daily Mail and the Daily Express were there before the cops came. He'd called the press. In fact, Don Short had told us they're coming to get you 3 weeks before. So believe me, I'd cleaned the house out because Jimi Hendrix had lived there before in this apartment, and I'm not stupid. I went through the whole damn house.
And it caused you a lot of heartache.
It caused me a lot of heartache, and it still does. So I want to know any legal minds listening. How do I get rid of a record? Because the statute of appeals ran out because I don't have a legal mind. And I went to find out about it at one time because I wanted to get this thing off my record. And they told me, oh, you should have applied within the first 2 years. But nobody told me that. And the only reason I pleaded guilty because I thought they'd send Yoko away because we weren't married. And I thought, what's the word? They throw her out of the country. So I copped a plea. And the cop said to me, well, we've got you now, so it's nothing personal. You know? And I have problems all around the world because of that record.
Was that arrest after Cold Turkey?
Probably.
I think it probably was.
The picture on the back of Life of the Lions, Unfinished Music number 2, is us being dragged out of the police station. It's from a newspaper picture.
Just before Christmas 1969, you did a concert at the Lyceum in the Strand in London with the Plastic Ono Band, including George Harrison, Billy Preston, one of my favourites, and the late lamented Keith Moon, God bless him.
Yeah, what and Bonnie character. And Delaney's whole band.
That's right.
We were talking about that yesterday, funnily enough.
Oh, yes.
It was a UNICEF concert.
It's amazing that it's recorded.
Oh,
I mean,
great,
like
that somebody remembers it.
I know.
Because we were doing the show, and George and Bonnie and Delaney and all the, Billy and all that crowd turned up. They'd just come back from Sweden, and George had been playing Invisible Man in Bonnie and Delaney's band, which Eric Clapton had been doing, to get the pressure of being the famous Eric and the famous George. They became the guitarist in this, and they all turned up, and it was again like the concert in Toronto. I said, will you come on? He said, well, what are you going to play? I said, listen, we're going to do probably blues or whatever was current, Cold Turkey, which was three chords, and Eric knew that, and Don't Worry, Kyoko, which was Yoko's, which was three chords, a riff. And I said, once we get onto Yoko's riff, just keep hitting it. And it was a fantastic show. I don't think it was recorded. It
very
was fantastic.
Heavy.
Very heavy.
I thought it was.
It was.
It came out 3 years later on sometime in New York City.
My mind is not that clever.
Sometime in New York City was not that popular because it was such a heavy
that was
piece,
a heavy
you know?
Show. Mm. And a lot of the audience walked out. But the ones that stayed, they were in a trance, man. They just all came to the front because it was one of the first real heavy rock shows where we had a good backing that John and Yoko did together. And I always think of some of those kids formed those freaky bands later because there was about 200 kids at the front there, some about 13, 14, 15, who were looking at Yoko and looking at us the way we were playing that Don't Worry, Kyoko, and it really reached a peak of whatever you call it. It really went out there that night.
December 1970, the Plastic Ono Band album, which really did get some pretty good reviews, didn't it?
Yes. The Mother, we did a twin one. Yoko did one, I did one. In fact, you know what we were doing last night?
What were you doing?
We were playing Yoko's Plastic Ono Band album. The first track is called Why, And it was the first real rock and roll take we ever did together. And it's Ringo, Klaus, me on guitar, and Yoko on voice. And the fascinating thing is, even we didn't know where Yoko's voice started and where my guitar ended on the intro. But you can tell. And we were playing it last night for Jack Douglas.
You know, this is something very strange because John, being what he is, somehow he just goes all the way. So his guitar playing in avant-garde was quite avant-garde, really. And we both suffered because people didn't appreciate what we were doing. But in fact, John suffered as an avant-garde guitarist because he was saying, "Yeah, well, I wish somebody would notice what I did." And when you go back to Plastic Ono, Yoko Ono, Plastic Ono Band, you know, that album,
yeah.
I mean, his guitar playing,
thank you,
somebody
mother.
Should notice it because it's just fantastic
they
stuff.
They will. We'll reissue them.
Could you use John Yoko and Phil Spector if we stick on that for just a moment?
Sure.
And it was the first official solo LP.
Yes.
So you were what you were at long last, and there were no strings attached, so to speak.
Yes, it was nice to do it, and it was minimal again, meaning there was no overdubbing, just my guitar, a bass and drums, or my piano, a bass and drums. And if you remember, at the beginning of Mother, the beginning of the album has this bell going, dong, dong, dong. It's a church bell, which I slowed down to 33, so it's really like a horror movie. And that was like the death knell of the mother-father Freudian trip.
Christmas we get, we deserve.
is the Harry Simeon Chorale. No, it is not. Of course not. That's Joan Jett from her brand new album and a remake of Little Drummer Boy. Before that, do you remember his brief moment in the spotlight? A gentleman by the name of Miguel Rios and a hit single from back about 1969 or so, Song of Joy. Greg Lake starting things off with his Christmas single, I Believe in Father Christmas. It is 1218 at 102.7 radio in New York, WNEW-FM, and we will continue with the BBC John Lennon interview right after these words.
You're a stupid student or business person, and you have a lot of reading and studying to do, this message is for you. Classes are forming right now for the Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics special 7-day holiday course. This course will begin and end during the Christmas holidays. It is not an abbreviated course. It is our regular course taught in 7 consecutive lessons. This course is the answer to your problems, because in only 7 days, you learn how to read much faster, how to concentrate completely, how to comprehend and remember more of what you read, how to take accurate, concise notes, how to study efficiently and effectively, and how to get organized for maximum results. Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics will definitely work for you. So make the decision today to do something about your reading and studying problems. Call us, Evelyn Wood Reading Dynamics, at area code 212-869-9440. That's 212-869-9440.
In every season, there is a triumph. The one play you know you must see. The one play with mass appeal. This year, the play is Mass Appeal. Time magazine writes, Mass Appeal is a luminous play, a glowing evening about the indivisibility of love. Milo O'Shea could enter the Actors Hall of Fame with this one performance. Newsweek says Mass Appeal has explosive humor and true passion. It's a fervent and funny play. It's deeply satisfying in the crescendo of its emotion. The New York Times raves, Mass Appeal is a winning drama that lives up to the promise of its title. It delivers laughter and love. In New York Magazine, the word is Mass Appeal captures life beautifully. It's at home on Broadway, where the larger space adds something. More room, perhaps, to fill up with the divine. And the New Yorker sums it up. A brilliant play. It deserves a long run. At the Booth Theater, call 246-5969 for Mass Appeal. A triumph of the human spirit. The triumph of the Broadway season.
Four friends, a Filmways picture.
You feel, the one thing I think you feel is spent, but I feel good about it.
Oh yeah, you know, they were real people. They were written
in real lives, but very strong in it. You don't see stories like that. I can't get it out of my mind.
The writer Steve Tess said she already has an Academy Award, right?
And Arthur Penn said 2 Oscar nominations. The director.
Four friends.
One of my favorite parts was about the girl having 3 guys in love with her.
I would love with.
It's emotional. You laugh. You cry.
I love the naturality. I love the passion.
Yeah, the realness, the passion. Okay, yeah. All those things. And look at us. You're 31, you're 17, and me, 39. I mean, obviously, it's a story about the times of all our lives. I just think the picture is going to be one of the real pictures of this generation.
Yeah. I'll watch the Oscars.
Four Friends, a Filmways picture. Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
Exclusive world premiere engagement starts Friday at Reed's Little Carnegie. Pat Benatar in concert on Friday between 9 and 10 p.m. Sponsored by 7-Up right here at 102.7 WNEW-FM in New York. Continuing now with the BBC John Lennon interview. In this segment, John talks about his relationship with Paul, the song Imagine, and the March 1971 recording of Power to the People.
Oh, it just seems like Power to the People. Wasn't that the First World War? No, it wasn't. Anyway, I remember that was the expression going round those days, and I used to give anybody it was sort of left field, avant-garde, or in the art field or the political field money, kind of out of guilt as well, because I was thinking, well, I'm working class and I'm not one of them, but I'm rich, so therefore I have to fork out. And I kind of wrote Power of the People in a way, kind of as a guilt song, you know? Sort of, I better do that.
But incidentally, we heard it last night just by accident, so to speak.
Good intro.
And it's very heavy, very good.
Power to the people! Power to the people! Power!
We moved to Imagine in November 1971. John, it wasn't released as a single until November 1975. That's a four-year gap.
Really?
And I think if you said to most music programmers around the world which would be the John Lennon track that they would instantly pick to play, I think it would be Imagine. It's had fantastic airplay.
Amazing. It was made in 72 and put out in 75.
November 1971, you did the Imagine album, and it was released in November 1975, eventually as a single. And I remember trying to find it on a single. I think you could get it on an American import for a while, but eventually, I think I'm right in saying that Great Britain finally decided to do something with it and put it out as a single.
Well, I must say I'm blank on why that would have happened. It must have been either because Klein and EMI or whoever was...
Decided that maybe it's a bit too political
or whatever reasoning they had for him, because it was a single in America, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
And I think it was something to do with they wanted to sell the album, so make them buy the album to get it managed, some garbage like that. It surprises me. Actually, that should be credited as a Lennon Ono song, mm-hmm. because a lot of it, the lyric and the concept came from Yoko, but those days I was a bit more selfish, a bit more macho, and I sort of omitted to mention her contribution. But it was right out of Grapefruit, her book. There's a whole pile of pieces about Imagine This and Imagine That, and give her credit now, long overdue.
Together in those days, we just inspired each other.
Yeah, but if it had been Bowie, I would have put Lennon Bowie. If it had been a male, you know, when we wrote Fame together, Harry Nilsson, Old Dirt Road, is Lennon Nilsson. But when we did it, I just put Lennon because, you know, she's just the wife and you don't put her name on, right?
Well, that's before Woman is the Nigger of the World, I suppose.
Yes, yes, yes.
I have to say that on that Imagine album is a track called How Do You Sleep, which a lot of people considers was a swing at Mr. McCartney.
Well, I think I explained it pretty well in a Playboy interview. I used my resentment against Paul that I have as a kind of sibling rivalry resentment from youth to create a song.
Does it go about that far?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, rivalry between two guys, it was always there, but it was a creative rivalry.
Yes.
Like there was a rivalry between the Beatles and the Stones. It was a creative rivalry in that respect. Not a terrible, vicious, horrible...
Vendetta,
because it's not on that level, but one tends to, when interviewed by a print press... You see, now you can hear the tone of my voice, you see. So I can say, I felt resentment.
I can see your face, too.
Right, you can see the face, and you know what I'm saying is, I felt resentment, so I used that situation the same as I used withdrawing from heroin to write Cold Turkey. I used my resentment and withdrawing from Paul and the Beatles and the relationship with Paul to write How Do You Sleep. I don't really go around with those thoughts in my head all the time. I wanted to make a funky track, and this is a good way to make it. It always looks like I'm freaking out about him, like Dr. Jekyll or something. It's not that at all.
So Sergeant Pepper took you by surprise.
Andy Peebles was speaking to John Lennon and Yoko Ono on December the 6th, 1980 in New York.
This portion of the BBC John Lennon interview, sponsored by The Gap.
Happy days are coming your way.
The Gap is having a sale. Four tons of fashion in a stylish display. It's a great big beautiful sale.
Hi, this is Terry David Mulligan telling America that sweats are really going places.
Not like some announcers.
Please. You know, sweats can go anywhere.
To meet the president?
No, not quite. But the Gap's having a sweat sale week with 20% off on all the colorful styles.
Oh, go playing, slaying, shopping, bopping.
Bopping? Do you mind? Check out the pastels and bright colors and zip-up and hooded crewneck sweatshirts and sweatpants.
Dancing and romancing?
Yeah, well, see, prices start at $8.80, so you can afford to go anywhere.
Sure, where you go.
Come on. The Gap's America's headquarters for sweats.
And save 20% now.
When you count on activewear value, count on The Gap, the world's largest seller of Levi's jeans.
Fall into The Gap.